toes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered castles.
Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. Today I talk to the incomparable Judy Collins. Judy Collins is appearing live at the Tally Ho Theater in Leesburg, Virginia, Friday night, May 13th. Other upcoming tour dates are available on her website, judycollins.com. We all know Judy from the Crosby, Stills, and Nash hit Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, and she is certainly a favorite of our audience, someone whose beautiful soprano voice transcends most music styles, genres, and the test of time, making her not old, but truly better. One of the leading singers of the 1960s and 70s, Judy Collins was born on May 1st, my birthday too. She grew up in Denver, Colorado, where she began studying classical piano at the age of 5. In her teens, Collins turned to folk music. She scored her first commercial hit in 1967 with the iconic Joni Mitchell song, Both Sides Now, which is playing now. In our interview today, among the many subjects Judy talks about is her early recording career at Elektra Records, what she learned, and how it influenced the rest of her work.
I think we learn a great deal in a situation that is professional and challenging and goes on for 25 years. And that was the end of my first contract with Elektra, was 25 years, during which I made probably 15 to 20 albums for them.
Unlike Joan Baez, who she was frequently compared, Judy Collins used her classical music training to evolve into being a singer of art songs and show tunes, sometimes employing semi-classical arrangements. After her public debut at age 13 as a classical pianist, Judy Collins continued to make her mark. She's recorded more than 40 albums using her lifelong love of guitar and a broad range of material from folk and pop to standards and her own compositions. Known for her clear, crisp soprano voice, both Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie are influences, and Judy recorded one of her very first hits, a song by Pete Seeger, Turn, 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 which you'll hear.
I was fortunate enough to meet Pete Seeger in 1961 when I was 22. So I knew him, I knew his songs, I sang on shows with him. And Turn, Turn, Turn I recorded in 1963.
Judy Collins is famous for her versions of songs by Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and Judy's version of the moving Send in the Clowns by Stephen Sondheim from the musical A Little Night Music is among my favorite songs of all time. The song earned her a Grammy nomination, and Sondheim took home the award for Song of the Year. Her recording of the song hit the charts twice, first in 1975 and then in 1977. Judy Collins has also written two memoirs, a children's book, and a novel, and is an accomplished painter, actress, filmmaker, and record label head. In 1969, Collins made her stage debut, appearing in a New York revival of Peer Gynt with Stacy Keach and Olympia Dukakis. She later made other appearances on television, including guest spots on The Muppet Show and Sesame Street. Working behind the camera, Collins produced and co-directed the 1974 documentary Antonia, A Portrait of the Woman, about her former piano teacher. The film received an Academy Award nomination. Judy Collins is a longtime social activist for causes that include UNICEF, suicide prevention, and artists' rights.
There's no question that the life of an artist is not easy. It never has been easy. The beginning was extremely hard for very different reasons, but you always have challenges, and of course the internet provides plenty of challenges for all of us in the music business, in the publishing business, in any artistic pursuit, because part of the deal is that people want us not to be paid what we should be paid. They want to violate our copyrights.
Judy Collins has been a champion for equal rights for women and civil rights. During the 1960s and 70s, Collins appeared at numerous protests calling for the end of the Vietnam War. She also helped African Americans register to vote in the South. After four decades, she still records and tours. Now in her 70s, Collins continues to pursue her creative passions, including as a published author. She established her own label, Wildflower Records, in 2000 to release her own music and to support the work of other independent artists. Through Wildflower, Collins put out 2010's Paradise, which features appearances by Stephen Stills and Joan Baez. Collins maintains a heavy tour schedule, playing more than 80 dates per year. She's also popular on the lecture circuit, giving talks about mental health issues and suicide prevention. Her latest project is a unique duets album titled Strangers Again on Judy Collins' own Wildflower label and is available at Amazon. Please join me and my special guest, Judy Collins.
Welcome to the Not Old, Better podcast. It's time for this week's featured guest on the Not Old, Better podcast. And now your host, Paul Vogelzang.
Well, welcome, Judy. Thanks so much for being here on the show. It is just a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I know you're touring and you're busy, 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 and you're going to be in Northern Virginia at the Tally Ho Theater on May 13th. From your website, it looks like you're going to be touring with a group. Is that right?
Well, I travel with my musical director, Russ Walden, and I'm not sure if Ari's on that show, but it'll be me for sure.
It'll be great, and you'll play some piano. And
I will.
It'll be great to see you. Great to have you here. We're very excited to hear music. We'll play a little bit of your music, but I thought we'd start by talking a little bit about your book, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. I really enjoyed that book, and I want you to know I'm a big fan of Billy Collins' poetry, too. That poem, The Lanyard, is one of my favorites, and every time I read that and think of my mom, I just about tear up.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, certainly all the names are mentioned there in your book from kind of my era, from our era, our shared era, Dylan and Joan Baez and Stephen Stills, of course. And in that book, you describe a few of the issues that you faced while under contract at Elektra. What were some of those and how did that kind of shape your career really ultimately in kind of forming Wildflower, the label? Is that right?
I think we learn a great deal in a situation that is professional and challenging and goes on for 25 years. And that was the end of my first contract for the Elektra, was 25 years, during which I made probably 15 to 20 albums for them. And of course, it was a learning experience. You know, you go from being a beginner, which I certainly was with Made of Constant Sorrow, to coming into the challenge of trying to find the right structure in order to find a place to work comfortably. And that eventually led me to starting my own label in 1999, Wildflower Records. And of course, Revenge is Sweet. My recent albums are all on Wildflower Records, my own label.
I agree. Revenge is Sweet. And it, kind of in this era of artists self-publishing and social media and iTunes, you certainly are very well known for your journaling and your photography and the kind of chronicling that you've done over your career. It seems to be very easy for you to participate in social media.
Oh, I love social media. It's very comfortable. I find that I can work very well in it because I like, as you said, I like taking pictures. I like talking about issues. I like making contact and telling people what's on my list. So, yes, I have a good time with it.
Your website, judycollins.com, is beautiful, by the way.
Oh, thank you. A young artist from Norway designed that website, and I'm very happy with it.
Certainly, spanning your career has been some of these changes in social media and the record business. And tell us a little bit about what you notice most about the music industry today that's changed from when you first started out.
There's no question that the life of an artist is not easy. It never has been easy. The beginning was extremely hard for very different reasons. But you always have challenges, and of course the internet provides plenty of challenges for all of us in the music business, in the publishing business, in any artistic pursuit, because part of the deal is that people want us not to be paid what we should be paid. They want to violate our copyrights. They want to buy us out. They want to buy us for cheap. They want to put us in packages that will make us broke over the course of our lives. So that's all operative, including places like Spotify, which some artists have taken their music down from, Taylor Swift, for instance, and others. There's a big push to have artists paid the royalties that they deserve, which they've never been paid in the music business. Radio, AM and FM, never paid artists, so that goes back 77 years. Congress has still not ratified and changed that law. So we are the only country in the free world who does not pay performers a royalty. So we stand out once again, just like we stand out in the birth rate level and in the social welfare levels and many, many other levels in the world. You know, we're going down. And the music and the artistic payment for artists was one of the first signs of that. That and the unions, I suppose. So it's always been a fight to be an artist, to maintain your quality, your integrity, to do the thing that you must do because that's what you were born with, and to get paid for it. So I would say that, yes, there are many problems now, which were certainly something like the same in the earlier days. Different causes. Nowadays, of course, we're all on the road because nobody can make any money in the record sales business. So we all sell everything like off of a, you know, it's like we have our little carts, our little we're little vendors. We're like the guys on the corner pushing our CDs at our shows. And that's because we can't really sell them anyplace else. I've had a very good run with Amazon on this last album, Strangers Again. They've been wonderful to me. And I finally made the Billboard charts again. But unless you're selling 1 million and 2 million and 10 million records, the big companies certainly don't pay attention. So it's like a family-run business where everybody wears 20 hats, and the artist who's performing and singing and playing and writing songs also has to run their business and show up at the concerts as well as, you know, running their office. So it's more and more difficult. I would have to say in my own case that it's been more and more successful. I am blessed with the ability to tour and always have toured, so that really helps.
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned all that. I personally am a big supporter of copyright, and I think the more that we talk about some of this, the more people understand that there is a very direct correlation between artists' creativity and their ability to kind of make a living. I think the better we're going to address some of these issues of protecting artists' rights and making sure that artists have the rights to choose how they share their art and what they're getting paid. It's ridiculous to think that you should be relegated to making a living selling T-shirts, for example, hawking T-shirts.
Right. That's right. That's where it's gone.
Yeah, it seems to have, and I think that's unfortunate, but I'm thrilled to hear that you have had success with Strangers Again. I think that's a wonderful combination of, again, these great artists, Jackson Browne, James Taylor, Michael McDonald, Don McLean, you know, they're just these wonderful guys.
Yeah, they are wonderful.
And your dad was a singer too, right?
He was a performer. He had a radio show for 30 years. He made his living singing the wonderful American Songbook, telling his jokes, writing his own script, reading Dylan Thomas and Emerson on the radio. You know, people got a lot of bang for their buck on that radio show, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, those are the kind of things that we need to resurrect a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I try to give it my best shot.
You've done great. So the male voices, those great, and Glenn Hanser, too, I thought that was...
Yeah.
So what was that like to gather all those men around you to sing?
Oh, I loved it. I grew up, there were five of us. I grew up with three brothers, so I love having a lot of guys around, I must say.
I have two sisters, so I'm really comfortable with that side of things myself.
Good.
Well, Judy, from your greatest hits album, I'd like to play a little bit of Turn, 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 and certainly for our shared generation, that is an anthem, that wonderful Pete Seeger song. Can you tell us a little bit about that song and
sure.
and why it's still so relevant today even?
I was fortunate enough to meet Pete Seeger in 1961 when I was 22, and I've known him right up until his death last year. Yeah, I guess I think he died in early 2015. January. So I knew him, I knew his songs, I sang on shows with him, and Turn, Turn, Turn I recorded in 1963 on my third album, and it was really my first song that began to be noticed by the critics and the writers and the charts. And it's a song, of course, that he wrote based on one of the books in the Bible. So I think it has a lot of things going for it, including the fact that, as you say, it's really timeless.
It really is timeless. And it's interesting, this version, the one that we'll listen to from The Greatest Hits, is very much almost hymnal-like. I just think it has that kind of that quality.
Yes, it does. I'm sure that it does, and it's all dictated by the lyric and the melody.
Well, we're going to listen to just a little bit of it here, Judy.
Good.
To everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything turn, 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 there is a season. Time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together.
Well, Judy, thanks for introducing that song, Turn, 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 again by Pete Seeger. Just a beautiful version of it.
Good, thank you.
I'm curious about your childhood. Your soprano voice is just perfect, as we hear in that song. Do you have perfect pitch?
Oh, who knows? I have no idea.
It really is very sharp. It's a beautiful voice throughout your entire career.
Thank you. Well, I've been very lucky and had a lot of good training, and so, you know, I'm fortunate in that regard.
You were 5 when you first started playing, is that what I read?
Well, yes, but I was singing from birth, I think.
I read, too, an interesting, I thought this was kind of interesting, again, kind of referring back to this kind of this gender idea that one of your teachers, I think it was Antonia Brico, she fought some barriers to women. And did some of that early kind of work that you did with her and some of your early singing, did that influence the activism that we know Judy Collins to be representative of?
Well, I think it was a combination of things. Certainly, Brico had certainly something to do with that, because being as she was, the first woman conductor to conduct major symphonies around the world, and the history that she had, you know, I would go to my lessons, and then sometimes I'd stay afterwards on a Saturday afternoon, and I would help her file and catalog her press clippings, and they were from everywhere. And she worked with all the greatest conductors and the greatest orchestras in the world. Her first conducting gig was with the Berlin Philharmonic in 1929, when that was the greatest orchestra in the world. So she'd just come out of conducting school in Europe. And so, of course, I was affected by her very much and trained very well by her.
Yeah, and your training spans, you know, you have musical theater in your background. You have this wonderful love of Sondheim. You really have so many different styles. Did you ever feel competitive with anybody artistically kind of coming up? Was Joan Baez or, you know, even Diana Ross? Did you view them as kind of competitors of yours?
Oh, no, 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 no. It's a party and everybody is free to dance.
Yeah. Well, I know you and Joni Mitchell are dear close friends, and certainly your covers of her music, hard to even go without mentioning that. We're grateful for Joni's recovery and the song, the Both Sides Now, that you won your first Grammy Award. I thought it was beautiful in its version, Joni's version, at the opening ceremonies for the Olympics, and just stunning there. With all of your musical theater experience, did you get involved at all in that Olympics production?
No. I did my work. I did my part for Joni.
Absolutely. And certainly you're doing your part so nicely for Stephen Sondheim. And
you bet.
Yeah, always. Your song, Sending the Clowns, is, of course, classic. And Grammy nominated also. And I can't leave an interview with you without playing a little bit of that. And maybe you could introduce that for us now, too. Just tell us a little bit about Send In the Clowns.
I was 1973 up to my, let's see, eighth album. I just recorded Amazing Grace on the album that was called Whales and Nightingales. And I was kind of floundering. I'd written a lot of new songs, but I didn't really think about what might happen with them. I went back to work very hard on the road. I've never stopped touring, which is wonderful. But I was kind of desperate, and my friend Nancy Bacall called me up, and she sent me over this cast recording of Little Night Music, and I said, wow, that's it. Send In the Clowns is for me. So that's how it happened.
It's a beautiful song. We're going to play a little bit of it now.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. The clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns just when I'd start opening doors. Finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure there.
Well, that was Send In the Clowns by Judy Collins. Judy, I just, again, can't say enough about that piece of music. Just absolutely beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Judy, you've been very honest on social media about the subject of suicide and alcoholism and your own sobriety, I think, for 35 plus years. Congratulations, absolutely. Your activism, you've talked openly about, you know, depression and all the things on your mind. Certainly for, you know, my audience, this 50 plus age community, this journey that you've been on, all of us have been on, really. And I wonder what you might say about the subjects of survival and prevailing and succeeding as you have and persevering.
Well, you have to keep at it. You have to try to keep getting better. You have to find a way to live with your demons and not kill off all of them because you're not sure which one really helps you. I really say that the only way to do it is a day at a time, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to get done.
That's wonderful. Well, Judy, we are looking forward to seeing you in Northern Virginia on the 13th. Your album, Strangers Again, with all those great guys, is out. It's available. Glad to hear that it's doing well on Amazon. We certainly will offer links to it, and we'll put links up to your wonderful website. But where else can people find you? Where do you like to connect with people most?
Well, I use a lot of Facebook, and of course, I use all my social media, so I have a good time.
You do. And well, thank you very much. And we've had a great time talking with you. And again, we will see you on the 13th, but thank you so much for your time today, Judy.
Thank you.